next to her. "Shanrong, Mom said you were coming," the boy squeals in English without a trace of an accent as he runs to Shan and jumps into his arms. The old woman rises. "Shanrong." I look at Shan quizzically. "They know me by Huang Xianrong, my Mandarin name," he explains. "And this is Paul." "Jinba when I'm here with Grandma," the boy says cheerily. "He lives in Arcadia," Shan goes on. "Then we're practically neighbors," I say. "What a trip." The old woman, who's introduced as Sosa, doesn't speak English, but she seems happy to see Shan. She pulls us to another table under a bamboo and thatch pavilion where one of her granddaughters, whose name I don't catch, pours tea. "I really want you to meet Tina," Shan says to me, "because she might have some ideas about your tea cake. While we're waiting for her to arrive, why don't you show it to Sosa? You never know." When I pull it out of my bag and lay it on the table, the old woman gasps and then scurries away as though she's seen a ghost. The boy from Arcadia laughs. "Grandma, she's so superstitious." The woman lingers at the edge of the main house, peeking out at us, wiping her eyes, then disappearing again. Shan looks at me and shrugs. The granddaughter pours more tea, but the whole thing is weird. "Is she crying? Maybe we should go," I say, rising. Before Shan can respond, the old woman sidles back to us and angrily addresses him. "She thinks my father has sent us," he translates, but he sounds as confused as I feel. "Your father?" "My father and this family have a long history together." She gestures up the mountain and rattles off a stream of sentences directed at me. "She wants you to go with her," he translates, obviously editing. "She says the two of you must go alone." "What does she want?" I ask nervously. It's one thing to be in a remote village with Shan, but it's quite another to go off with some crazy old bat. "She says, no men are allowed?" Shan answers, but his voice goes up at the end as if in question. "You'll be fine." His words are hardly reassuring. "I don't want to go anywhere." Then the old woman snatches my tea cake and runs away. Without thinking, I take off after her, but she's a lot stronger than she looks. She's sure-footed as she dashes up the narrow mountain path. I'm a lot younger, but I'm not a farmer, and I'm not accustomed to the altitude. I have to grab onto the limbs of trees and scraggly weeds to keep from falling. Higher and higher we go. I should have turned back after 5 minutes, but now it's too late, because now I truly am in the middle of nowhere, in the forest, picking my way through a spidery network of pathways. Monkeys screeching, birds calling alarms. A half hour, an hour longer. I can't lose sight of the old woman, because if I do, not only will my tea cake be gone, but I'll be hopelessly lost. My lungs burn, my thighs ache, and all I can think about are my mom and dad, how much I love them, and how broken they'll be if I don't come home. The old woman stops in a small clearing, finally allowing me to catch up. I'm gasping for breath, but she's fine. She gives me a steady look, takes my upper arm with a firm hand, and turns me toward the view. She holds up the tea cake and then points to the mountains. Instantly, I see it. The V's, the terraces, the stream. The realization makes my knees buckle. Is the old woman my mother? She can't possibly be. She practically drags me up the hill. We're climbing and climbing. The whole time she's jabbering something that sounds like ama, 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 stopping occasionally to point at her belly and then up the mountain. Pretty soon the path disappears entirely. Up ahead I see a boulder, the squiggly circle I know so well. No one could find this place without the map, because it's so well hidden. The old woman tucks my tea cake inside her tunic. Like a crab, she edges around the boulder with me right behind her. I'm shaking badly, but I make it to the other side. Camphor trees, centuries old, create a canopy above us, sheltering several tea trees. The old woman pulls out the tea cake, but I don't need her to point out the tree that's been the symbol I've dreamed and wondered about my entire life. Up in the boughs, a woman picks leaves, which confirms my impression that this grove, while hidden, is both well cared for and private, as though only these two have ever been here. I start to feel something. Memories. although I can't possibly have a single memory of this place. Then, from deep within me, a profound sense of love radiating out to everything around me, complemented by reciprocal waves of love coming at me, enveloping me. All that seems impossible, too. I'm both perplexed and overwhelmed. Finally, the woman in the tree notices us. Her eyes widen. Then she becomes so still. It's as if her heart has stopped beating and her muscles have frozen. At last, she begins to move, slowly climbing down, stepping gracefully from limb to limb. When she reaches the ground, she looks from the old woman to me. A moment of confusion, then recognition. I know her too, because I've seen traces of her in my face in the mirror. My mother. My Ama.
The Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane, a novel, was written by Lisa C. and read by Ruthie Ann Miles, Kamiko Glenn, Alexandra Allwine, Jeremy Bobb, Joy Osmansky, Emily Walton, Aaron Wilhelmy, and Gabra Zachman. It was recorded by Noriko Okabe. Editing and post-production by Frog Pond Productions. The mix engineer was Terry Hogan. Tiffany Ferrari was the associate producer. The Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane was produced and directed by Tara Thomas. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane, a novel, is available in print from Scribner.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.